Welcome to the ITAD Talk Podcast with your host, Jeff Bittner.
So our guest this afternoon is Craig Boswell, and he's the president of Hobie International, Inc. He is a co-founder and president, and he has been involved extensively in the design and development and deployment of electronics, demanufacturing, and recycling techniques. He also had a 9-year experience with Texas Instruments as an electrical engineer there, and had many different roles while he worked there at Texas Instruments. Along with that, Craig has played a key role in developing Hobie's processes and procedures for data security, asset tracking, and asset disposition services. He has authored numerous papers discussing end-of-life electronics, management techniques, and technologies. He is a sought-after speaker on a broad variety of subjects, including data security in both mobile and international IT space, reuse, and design for disassembly technologies. He also is the chair on ISRI's reuse and services panel, and was an active stakeholder participant in the EPA's R2 certification standard process. So we're very fortunate to have Craig on this morning and or this afternoon. And once again, we want to say thank you for attending the show, and welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
So I was wondering if first you might just tell us a little bit about the founding of the company, because I think a lot of people are interested in, like, well, how do you build a big company? And, you know, it obviously starts as an idea or a small company. So maybe you could share a little bit of that with us.
Yeah, definitely. I always joke that I don't think anybody sets out to be in the ITAD electronics recycling space. They just end up here. And that's very similar to our experience. I was on the engineering design side of electronics. My sister was in sales, and my father worked for AT&T, which, at the time was just winding down their emphasis on manufacturing. But, you know, they had been heavily involved in manufacturing, supporting the Bell system, and the Bell system was divesting at the time. And they actually owned a facility that did material recovery in the electronic space. And my dad was actually assigned to that facility to manage it at the end of his career because they had labor issues. And, you know, he called me up one day and he said, there's guys that want to buy this stuff and recover the components and reuse it. Do people really do that?
Wow.
Of course, I'm on the manufacturing side, and I'm like, I don't think so, man. We're really particular about our components and what we use and vetting our vendors. But, you know, this is way before Google, but we did a little research, and sure enough, there was a very active market for that. And my dad and my sister, towards his retirement, looked at it, and we wrote a business plan and bootstrapped the company, money out of savings. Our Chicago facility was a desk in the back of somebody's other warehouse that they were in the brass space. And our Dallas facility started in my garage. And
oh, my gosh.
From there. So it was your bootstrap story. There's a lot of advantage to bootstrapping.
What year was this? And you said that you were in Dallas?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we opened the initial facility in Chicago. I was working at TI and had a engineering job, and quitting to start was a very difficult decision. Thankfully, I have a wonderful wife that was very supportive of that. And so we operated for about 8 months in Chicago before I quit and opened a facility here that supported, at the time, our telecom business.
Wow. You know, it's funny you mentioned about the used parts business, because I think it was somewhere around the 90s. I'm trying to remember exactly. It might have been 90, maybe 97 or so when I used to have an electronic, I used to do the assembly and build memory modules and the pick and place machines. And I sold that off to a company called Princeton Technology in California. And when I was there, because I kind of helped them for a short period of time, about a year, I watched one of their salesmen do a deal where he sold 100,000 memory chips that were going to be pulled off boards and put on tape and reel so that they could reuse them on different memory modules. And he made a dollar each. And so he bought them for a dollar and sold them for $2. And I'm like, so I watched the guy make $100,000 on one transaction. Mm-hmm. I was like, I didn't know people bought used parts. So it's so interesting.
No, if you recall that time frame, Windows was, you know, generationally increasing the demand on the PCs, especially for memory.
Right.
And, you know, funny, all things come in circles. There was a chip shortage, much like we're dealing with now. And especially DRAM memory to create SIM modules to allow people to expand the memory in their computer to upgrade, you know, from a massive amount of 1 meg to 4 meg, which seemed like a huge improvement, were in tremendous demand, but there was a chip shortage on DRAM chips, and recovering them from boards and then putting them on SIM modules for memory expansion on your computer was a huge business, largely a gray market business, but a huge business in the U.S. and abroad.
Yeah, it's funny how large the gray market is. It just seems to be so many people in it for all different types of components, products, boards, hardware, and everything. I had another question for you. Since Hopi has established itself as a leader in the industry, but you personally have done much to help the industry improve, I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about your roles with ISRI and other associations and some of the big issues that have been impacted.
Yeah, so, you know, at the ITAD Summit, we spoke on mentoring. And, you know, it's amazing. As a small company, you can often feel isolated and overwhelmed. And industry associations such as ISRI and the electronics division really give you a look into the broader industry. At some levels, even though we've been doing this for 30 years and the industry has really existed for even more like 40 years, we're still in our infancy. We're still dominated by smaller entrepreneurial companies. You know, there's major companies in this space such as Ingram and Sims, but there's a lot of the industry is dominated by small entrepreneurial companies. And my involvement in ISRI has benefited us way more than I've benefited ISRI, I can tell you, on several levels. One is, you know, there's a lot going on right now legislatively. Right to repair is a massive issue. You know, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years ago, it was CRTs and export restrictions. And an organization such as ISRI, you know, is going to give you visibility into what's going on in D.C. and what's going on at the state level. Something that I can remember prior to my involvement being blindsided several times by fairly significant moves on the advocacy front that, you know, I wasn't aware of till they made the newspaper. And now not only am I aware of them before they happen, but I'm actively involved. Our company is actively involved in, you know, trying to make sure that recyclers and IT asset disposition companies and stakeholders are represented as these decisions are made. Then you have other issues, you know, R2v3 is in the R2 standard as a whole. I was involved way, way, way back when the EPA convened a group of us to come up with a standard, and that standard has evolved tremendously. R2v3 is a massive jump. The electronics division was actively involved with SERI in trying to provide feedback to the TAC regarding the changes that were going to occur in R2v3 to make them more palatable for the industry as a whole, for industry players. And I think we accomplished a lot of that. It's still still has a ways to go. We still have things to learn. But I think, you know, that advocacy has been important for the industry as a whole. I can tell you that over the last 2 years, probably the greatest benefit I've gotten out of ISRI, the electronics division, and just my association with other companies was navigating COVID. Do we shut down? Do we not shut down? You know, what does PPP mean for me? Should I be testing for temperatures? You know, is it legal for me to test people? I can remember when that first started, I wasn't sure it was legal. I thought it was a HIPAA violation. And, you know, we got feedback from the safety and health people at ISRI that said, no, you know, there's been exemptions made due to COVID for you to do those things. You know, we're dealing now with the Delta variant. We're under the 100 employee restriction. We know that OSHA is going to come down, but I was just on a call, 4 hours ago, where we were talking about, you know, what will the impact be for our companies? You know, people that refuse a vaccine will have to get tested. Do they do that on company time? You know, do you pay them for that time? Do they have to do that on their own? Does the company pay for the test if they start charging for tests? There's talk about charging for tests. So it is a challenge to run a small company, especially in this industry, because so many external forces, you know, affect our ability to provide our service. And, you know, that type of relationships, whether it be mentoring or advocacy or just commiseration sometimes, can really make a big difference for your company.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that when the virus started, because I know one of the problems that we had here, in fact, Reich was kind of giving us some counsel then and suggested that maybe management, you know, just work from home because we weren't doing the processing. And so the minute that I said what we were going to do that, like everybody got scared, you know? So I said, okay, all right. So we'll just all come in, you know? So we were just going to do it to try to protect you. But you know, we want to show that, you know, we're part of the team and we'll be here. And then, you know, once we made that decision and showed up every day, then slowly the fear kind of ebbed, but there was a lot of fear. So.
No, we made a very similar decision for a very similar reason. You know, because, you know, we certainly had people that were scared to come to work. And we thought the same thing. What kind of message does it show if we decide not to come, but make them come, you know? And so, yeah, those were very uncertain times. And, you know, you were making fairly substantial decisions, you know, that might involve the safety and health of your employees. They were difficult decisions to make.
And then along with that, too, we were trying to, I'm sure, along with you, trying to manage the amount of material coming in because we work with the data centers. And so some of them, you know, and like even with IT equipment, some of the people weren't going into the office. So they weren't looking at the IT assets. They weren't getting rid of the IT assets. It was not necessarily a priority. However, there was, you know, a pretty good skew of backlog that we had, which I'm sure you also did, and you had, and then it would just kind of come in spurts, you know, when people would finally go in, okay, we got to get this done. And so I don't know if you experienced kind of the same process during that time.
Yeah. We, you know, I think like everybody, things just kind of ground to a halt for a short period of time while people tried to digest, what does all this mean? Is it safe? You know, is it safe to receive material? You know, we were concerned about contact and do we have to quarantine the material? Do we have to clean everything? And then when we started to navigate through that and get beyond that, we seemed to see fits and sputters. We, in addition to doing data center work, we do a lot of distributed assets and we're very heavy into mobile. And as our clients tried to move their workforce to an at-home workforce, there was, you know, new paradigms that we had to reckon with, you know, assisting in deployment of assets at residents, assistance with recovery of assets from residents, you know, support for repair for assets that used to run through the IT department that now were directly coming to us for repair services. So, you know, it was a significant change in our business model over a fairly rapid or a fairly short period of time with a fairly rapid learning curve to be able to do those services.
Yeah, it definitely was.
And don't forget, the best way to support ITAD content is to rate and like the show on iTunes, Google, Spotify, or anywhere you might listen.